Jim was at the laundromat when he heard. His ear said, "Maraca, senor," but his nose said, "Hey, freshest scent ever." Following his nose, Jim found a man pouring Gain scent beads into the washer. The scent, the freshness. Jim blurted, "Sir, your scent maracas smell amazing." You could call them scent maracas, but most noses call them Gain scent beads. Try Gain scent beads, way fresher than detergent alone.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
It's that time, Prior Faithful. Time to discuss everything going on with the Padres. We've gathered the entire 97.3 The Fan crew together to bring you the most in-depth discussion on the Friars in our weekly Padres Roundtable, presented by San Diego Roundtable Pizza. Here's your host, Ben Higgins.
I like the double pepperoni on a roundtable pizza. I certainly expect this to be the spiciest roundtable yet. Welcome in to our 97.3 The Fan Padres Roundtable, commercial free for the next hour. We've got almost a full house. I will be spared the side eyes from Tony Gwynn Jr. He's in Atlanta with the San Diego Padres, and maybe that's for the best because Tony has too much perspective for this group that really, at this point, a fan base that's kind of angry coming off a three-game sweep by the Colorado Rockies. Let me introduce my colleagues to my left. We have Chris Ello from the Gwynn and Chris program, Craig Elston from Annie and Elston in the center.
Howdy.
My co-host, Stephen Woods. Good morning, Woodsy, again.
Hi, Benji.
And Annie from Annie and Elston on the other end.
Good morning, everybody.
All right. Well, obviously not as good a feeling as we had coming off the three-game series against the Dodgers, or even at this time last Thursday. Padres lose and look as bad as they have all season against the Colorado Rockies. So I'm going to start. Woods, actually, we talked about this morning, gave me a Kierkegaard quote yesterday. I mean, you didn't think we were going Danish philosophers this early in the roundtable. That's usually something I save for the second half, but we're jumping
Straight to the seventh inning stretch.
Chris.
Name your favorite.
And his quote is, his quote was, and this stuck with me, "Life can only be understood backwards, but it must be lived forwards." We don't know what's going to happen going forward with the San Diego Padres, but let's put on our crystal ball. When we look backwards at the end of this season and look at this Colorado Rockies series, Chris, will we view this as like a pivotal moment when everything fell apart and we finally got a clear picture of a team that really wasn't as good as we hoped it might be or showed for a little bit? Or will we look at this series as a blip on the radar of a team that was actually playing pretty good baseball, as Mike Schilt contends, early in the season, and this just happened to be one of those things that you see over the course of a baseball season?
Well, that's a really good question, Ben. I left my
Kierkegaard.
I left my stethoscope and my lab coat at home because I'm imagining everybody's feeling a little physically ill after what they saw this week, or at least mentally altered by the what took place. The Rockies did a lot of good things, and so to that end, Mike Schilt's correct. They got 10 RBIs with two outs. They got 13 of their 19 runs were driven in by the bottom of the lineup. They were 11 for 27 with runners in scoring position. Those are all pretty good things, and maybe the Padres could have done something about that with better pitching. But I do disagree with Mike Schilt's contention that they didn't get outplayed. They got outplayed. I mean, the Padres were 3 for 23 with runners in scoring position. That means the Rockies outplayed them in that category. The Padres had a base-running guffaw in each of the last two games. I thought the pitchers didn't bear down when they had to get that final out of an inning and make some good pitches. They made lousy pitches that the Rockies kept, you know, putting into play and driving in runs. But to answer Kierkegaard's question, that's a tough one. I hope that it's a blip on the radar, but I'm concerned with Atlanta and Cincinnati and the Yankees coming up. You know, we could be sitting here in a couple of weeks. This team could be 7 or 8 games under .500, and then, you know, we do have a problem.
Craig, I think, you know, you look for signs in a baseball season. Signs of a team that's overperforming, that's underperforming. Were flaws exposed? Is this something that we're going to look back as a troubling moment on the season?
Well, this past three-game series was a 2023 redo, period. This is the exact feeling we had last year, including getting shut out, losing at home to bad teams. But losing to bad teams so far has been the theme of the Padres season. We did this stat. We have to update it yesterday on our show. Padres facing fourth and fifth place teams this year, either last or next to last. They're now 7-13 in those games against the teams that you're supposed to beat. And if you go 13-7 in those games, we're talking about an entirely different season. We're talking about being right there with the Cubs and the Brewers in the standings, probably where you'd feel like, based on the kind of some of the feel-good that's happened this year, that the Padres should be. But frankly, they've done plenty of stuff to earn every one of the losses that they've accrued.
I want to talk about that, the bad teams issue that the Padres have had. I'm going to come back to it, but let's keep going around the table here, the little table that we have. And Woods, your thoughts
the round
on,
table.
On the, it's a little round, a literally yes. little round table that we have. Woods, your thoughts on whether this series is ultimately meaningful or it's something that the Padres can erase and get on from pretty quickly?
You know, it's hard to give this team the benefit of the doubt after the last couple of years until you can rip off 8, 9, 10 wins in a row. Seven. You know, the Rockies just won 7 in a row. You're telling me the San Diego Padres don't have the talent to do what the Colorado Rockies did. You can win the World Series and lose to the Colorado Rockies a few times. It's absolutely happened. The Texas Rangers won the World Series. They lost to the San Diego Padres. They got swept by the San Diego Padres last year. I'm sure that stuck in their craw for a minute. They moved on. They figured it out. We need to move on and figure it out sooner than later. You know, it always sticks in my head, the Oral Hershiser and Joe Davis. That's why they play the games. Cancel the parade. Yeah, man, you got to play these games, and you need to beat those teams, certainly. You just dig your hole bigger and bigger and bigger and bigger when you lose three games to the Colorado Rockies, man. So you hope that they can win 7 in a row, 8 in a row at one point. They've shown me nothing in the last 2 years that tells me they can.
Annie, as fans, I think we always see the worst coming. And that, you know, that just exposed all the fears that we had that this team is going to collapse like they did in 2021. They're going to, you know, never get it going like they did in 2023. How important do you think these last 3 days were for the Padres?
This team is an enigma. They are better against teams with winning records. They are better on the road. So I don't know if it really was that wild because they could go rip off a really good road trip and be right back in it. Now, it's funny, Joe Musgrove after the game yesterday was saying, everybody expects us to beat bad teams, but the Colorado Rockies played really well. They didn't play like a bad team. So there's that side of it. I think the Padres are showing you who they are to start the season. They won the series against the Cubs, the Dodgers, the Brewers. Then they lost to the series to the Blue Jays. They split with Colorado. They ripped off a five-game losing streak. Then they won again. They lost again. They're a streaky team. They're going to have these patches where they're really good, and then they get swept. And I think that until you have the superstars performing like the superstars, that's what you're looking at. You're kind of looking at this circling of that 500 mark.
Craig, I want to go back to your comment about the Padres' losing record against teams with losing records. You were on that even before the season started, identifying games against the Colorado Rockies as critical to the Padres' chances of success this year. I've seen it a bunch in our comments and social media. It seems so obvious. The Padres get up for the games against the good teams, and then they let down for the games against the bad teams. Is that a thing in baseball? I firmly believe it is a thing in football, that sometimes you can let down in that adrenaline-fueled sport when you have a lesser opponent. You don't sometimes play your best against a lesser team. But baseball's a different sport. Is that the problem for the Padres against the lesser teams? That they're not getting up for those games? They're not locked in enough for those games? Or is it something else that we can't explain yet?
Only the players can answer that properly. None of us can. I'd just be putting my thoughts on top of their actions. Their performance indicates that for years, this has been the case with these players in this clubhouse. The stars of this team, we've heard the same song and dance that we heard after Wednesday's game many, many times with the leaders of this team. So they have not proven to me in any sense that they are a locked-in group that has that eye of the tiger, that looks at a series like the Rockies as a chance to really, you know, take control and dominate a team. They got dominated on Wednesday, for sure. But I also kind of disagree with the, well, hey, you know, you got to tip your cap. The Rockies are playing great. Monday, they walked 11 guys.
Right.
They walked 11 guys, eight in the last three innings. That's a loss. That's a loss 98 out of 100 times. And the Padres somehow managed to lose that game to them. Tuesday, yeah, they hit some balls at people. They also blew it in the bullpen. You know, it's pretty tough for me to just sit there and go, well, tip your cap. Because we've been doing that, honestly, for a long time here in town.
Chris, you were kind of nodding for a second there. Football versus baseball, getting up for the good teams versus not the good teams. Mike Schultz said there's no Newt Rockne. It's funny, he used a football analogy. He said there's no Newt Rockne speech coming his team. Because a lot of baseball managers don't believe in that. But do the Padres need to get more locked in for these teams that have losing records?
No, I agree with you, Ben. I think for football and basketball, that kind of stuff can work. For baseball, to me, it seems like the harder you try, the less success you have. But I agree with Craig to a certain point, and I really agree with Annie. Until the leaders, the stars of this team, and let's call them out, Manny Machado, Fernando Tatis Jr., Xander Bogaerts. They're making all the money. They got to start leading this team to some wins. And they've got to lead the way against these poor teams. They have to go in and expect to dominate the Rockies. Those three went 6-for-33 in the series against the Rockies with one RBI. And that was on the Bogaerts home run in the first game. Manny is a mess at the plate right now. I'd almost rather him strike out than hit into a double play. Bogaerts has been going through it all year. To me, Fernando is not anywhere near the kind of impact guy that he's capable of being. I mean, his numbers are all right, but he's not impacting games the way he should. And this is where Craig hit it. They have to lead the rest of this group. When the Rockies come to town, it has to be, hey, we're going to crush these guys, and we'll show you how to do it.
I think what we're all kind of leading toward, Annie, is this a mental issue for the Padres rather than a lack of talent issue? We know Manny Machado has tons of baseball talent. We know Tatis and Bogaerts have tons of baseball talent. So it has to be somewhat a mental issue when players like that struggle.
I think so. I don't know. I mean, is it a culture issue? Is it a issue that's kind of permeating throughout the organization? Is it something that's a little bit maybe higher than this clubhouse or just continues to kind of fester in this clubhouse? I don't know. It's funny because we treat this team like a playoff team. But to be honest, they've gone to the playoffs twice in the last 10 years, and once was a 60-game season. And I don't really count it, not because it didn't matter, and it was great, and it was special, it was magical, but because you can't really compare against it. So I think that maybe, as much as I do think that their belief is there, and they're trying to get there, and they want to be that, and they want to build that culture, they're not there yet until they start consistently going to the playoffs year after year. And so I don't know what kind of problem it is. It's just kind of like they obviously are having a hard time getting past it, whatever it is.
Well, you've seen flashes of it. You know, you've seen flashes of really good culture and togetherness and moving the chain, next man up. You've seen a lot of that. You've seen unselfish baseball this year from the San Diego Padres. You've seen guys hitting it where it's pitched. You know, stringing 6-7 singles together at a time, that one inning. But
Pepperidge Farm remembers that one inning.
No, I mean, but you have seen it.
It's a good inning, though.
It was a great inning, man. It was a great inning. I was thinking about the tweet I saw from Shirtless Whitson yesterday that just, you know, it almost kind of blew my mind, and I knew this, but it was essentially, you know, he said, isn't it funny that our playoff appearances, our playoff hopes, rested on Jerks and Profar being good on a $1 million prove-it deal, Jake Cronenworth finding his way back, and a rookie in center field, never played center field before. And those three guys have been fantastic. The guys that we expected to carry the team are just not doing it. And it really hit home yesterday, and I went, oh, God, he's dead on. He is dead on. Those guys are pulling their weight. The other guys are not.
It's our 97.3 The Fan Padres Roundtable presented commercial-free by San Diego Roundtable Pizza. And that topic kind of led to a – it's almost a philosophical question we had at the end of our show. And that is, Craig, are the Padres a good team that plays bad about half the time? Or are they a bad team that plays really good about half the time? And doesn't really matter which they are if they end up around 500 anyway.
Yeah, I mean, obviously that's an impossible question, just like Kierkegaard. So thank you for building out these impossible questions.
This is the talking cure.
Right. I mean, I think reiterating a point that Annie made, you know, Mike Schilt yesterday went on and on about, well, we just won four straight series. As if, I mean, honestly, it's embarrassing. I still remember the 2019 Twitter, you know, poster. Five straight series wins, you know, and with Freddie Galvis.
They won six straight series at the end of 2023.
Last year. In fact, they've had stretches of extended success each of the last 3 years. So the whole, well, we did something we haven't done, and it was completely wrong. However, in addition to being factually incorrect, it elides the point. Yes, you went 8-4. Or 8-3, pardon me, over the course of four series, never winning more than 2 out of 3 in any of those series, but you immediately preceded that with 5 losses, and now you've had 3 losses. So all the 8-4 did, you erased in this course of 8 games. The Padres can be kinda good, but okay, and your famous golf, right? You can get a birdie here, a par there, but if you're triple bogeying, you're not going to have a good score.
Yeah, your score comes down. You know what I mean? Your score goes up in golf.
Can I say something, too, that is weird, that is maybe mental? It's weird that they all go into a funk at the same time.
Yes.
That's strange. I don't know what to make of that.
We've talked to Eno Saris about, like, similar swing planes, so they tend to be susceptible maybe to the same pitchers. And it's not always the good ones. It could be Austin Gomber that, for some reason, you know, all their swing planes don't fit. But there's never really been a great explanation. For my personal self, and maybe it's just, you know, just watching the players closely, the Padres always, at least for the last 3 to 4 years, have looked like a really good team. And certainly good team on paper, good collection of talent. Like, every year we predict, yeah, this looks like a pretty good team. And then we always wonder, why do they play bad so often when they have so many good players? And you'd think after 3 or 4 years of the same stuff over and over again, if we didn't have the answers, maybe someone in the organization would have an answer or two. But they've gone through now multiple managers. They've gone through multiple changes on their coaching staff. And if none of those guys seem to have an answer for it, is there an answer out there, Chris, for why the Padres play so bad with such good players?
I wish I'm going to, you know, no. Like I said, I didn't bring the lab coat because I don't know. But I want your question about, are they a good team that plays well or poorly sometimes, or are they a bad team that plays well? I don't think it's either. I think they're a mediocre team that plays mediocre all the time. And that, if you look at their record from the beginning of last year, it is currently 122 wins and 122 losses, or however it adds up. They were 2 games over 500 last year, and they're 2 games under 500 this year. So this is what they are, and this is what they're going to continue to be until Manny Machado and Fernando Tatis especially take the reins of this ball club and start dominating. And if they can't do that, there's no way this particular group can get a whole lot better than a game or two over 500, which, by the way, is the high watermark this season. 2 games over 500, they were 11-9 at one point. Now they're 2 games under. They got a bunch of good players, good enough to hang in there, but not good enough to get anywhere. And I don't have the answer, though, to why they're so inconsistent.
Let's talk about Mike Schilt for a second and, you know, his unrelenting.
When you think about businesses that are selling through the roof like Alo, Allbirds, or Skims, sure, you think about a great product, a cool brand, and brilliant marketing. But an often overlooked secret is actually the businesses behind the business, making selling and for shoppers buying simple. For millions of businesses, that business is Shopify. Nobody does selling better than Shopify, home of the number one checkout on the planet and the not so secret secret with Shop Pay that boosts conversions up to 50%, meaning way less carts going abandoned and way more sales going. So if you're into growing your business, your commerce platform better be ready to sell whenever your customers are scrolling or strolling on the web, in your store, in their feed, and everywhere in between. Upgrade your business and get the same checkout experience as business powerhouses like Alo, Allbirds, and Skims. Sign up for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odysseypodcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odysseypodcast to upgrade your selling today. shopify.com/odysseypodcast.
Silver linings and positivity. Annie, you've probably sat through more of the managerial news conferences than the rest of us over the last few years at the end of games. Do you feel like that the strategy that he employs, always making sure to point out what his team did well, minimizing what his team did poorly, is that the right way to go? Even if it frustrates fans who would like to hear maybe a little more dose of candid honesty after a tough loss, especially like the last one against the Rockies.
It's a good question. I mean, players speak very highly of Mike Schilt. I think that a few things to consider here. One, Mike Schilt is working against whatever happened in St. Louis, and none of us know all the details. You know, he was never, it was never so terrible that he couldn't get another job, but there was clearly some hurtness over what happened there, and he was blindsided. Two, he's watched the Titanic go down the last few years. He's trying to prevent against that. I think he's being overly on the other side of, hey, we are on the same page. We are all pulling in the same direction, because he's seen how it's gone for the other managers. And then three, I think he is just a very optimistic guy. He is someone who believes in always having his players back. It's interesting to me that you go in the clubhouse and the players are like, we played bad, and it's okay that the fans boo us because we understand it because we played bad. But Mike Schilt doesn't want to say it. So I do think that there's something there about maybe he could be a little bit more, you know, if he really wanted to, maybe he could say a few more of those things. And I don't know that the players would feel like he didn't have their back. I think they would probably agree and go, yeah, you know what, he's right. But he's just not that guy.
You know, Woods, Annie brings up, I think, a really interesting point. We talk with Mike Schilt every week. Is there in his like past that he's a little worried about? Like, is he when he especially is addressing the media, that he doesn't have the confidence necessarily? He wants to make sure that there's a positive perception, or try to make sure that there is a positive perception about his team at all times.
Yeah, maybe, but he's also the guy that's been here for a few years, and he has been at Petco Park, and he has met with Peter Seidler, and he knows what the fans think. And it's not like he just drove into town. And this is his first exposure to the San Diego Padres and their fan base. He knows very well what the fan base has gone through, what they expected and didn't get. That's what surprises me so much about yesterday in particular. I haven't really had one single issue with Mike Schilt until yesterday. Honestly, I like supporting my players. You know, I look at it like we have an audience. I have their backs. Like Mike Schilt has his players' back. I have their backs. And when you tell our audience and the other audiences out there, no, 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 that was actually good baseball. And you don't know, but I do. That was good baseball. Buddy, we know that wasn't good baseball. We watched it with our own eyes. You also know when you see bad baseball, because you've been here and you've seen it. And you know what this fan base has gone through. That's insulting. It's insulting. That's how I felt.
Three for 23 with runners in scoring position is bad.
That's baseball. Bad baseball.
May not be his definition, but it's one of my definitions.
But he's looking at the hard outs. He's looking at the, and it wasn't fully clean
sure.
in his last few days. He's got a process that is, he's like, are we doing the right things?
Right.
Are we doing the right things at the plate? And there were some things that they didn't, right, like you said, the 11 walks, all that, you know, not cashing them in, everything like that. But I think for the most part, he's looking at, are the processes right? If we just stay with the right processes, we're going to run into success.
But to tell a fan base, which, by the way, I'll make that point again, to tell a fan base that you've been around, to some extent, you know, I don't know how active he is on Twitter or anything else, but you've been around this fan base. You've been around that ballpark. You met with our late great owner. You know exactly what this fan base is expecting. And then you're surprised when they boo, and you are you're falling back on some series that you won, you know, before you just got smoked. Doesn't make any sense to me.
You know, process is important. You know, the best teams have good processes. But for fans, It doesn't matter. When you go to a game, you want to see your team win. And
you don't want to see hard hit balls. You want to see four hard hit balls.
Craig, we can be reasonable as fans and understand that they're not going to win every series. They're going to have a losing series against some teams with losing records because everybody does over the course of the season. But it's okay to acknowledge that you had a bad series when you have a bad series and not tell us that, no, really, it was okay because we walked a lot and we gave ourselves opportunities. That's better than getting no hit three straight games. I mean, yes, it is.
Yes.
We do know that. But ultimately, it's a failure of baseball, what the Padres did. And you can acknowledge that it's a failure of baseball.
I believe I've said either on – I know I've said it on our show. I think I've said it on the roundtable, too, that you know Mike's never going to change the way that he's acting. Like, if he does, we're going to be so far down the mine shaft that we're not going to be able to see sunlight anymore. However, given that, for each individual listening to him, your mileage is going to vary on how much of this you can take.
Yes.
And I'm with you as well, Woods, that yesterday I truly felt like you lost your position in San Diego as the number one turd polisher. And
you
Mike
being
Schilt,
Ben.
Yeah, Mike Schilt.
I deserve that.
Mike Schilt
get
got
on my
the
own show, so
yeah,
it's fine.
Yeah, it's you know, I hear all these
squeaky,
squeaky
noise,
sound,
yeah.
The squeaky sound.
Well, I mean, Mike Schilt got his shine box out yesterday in the worst way. I mean, he was shine box Schilt yesterday. Top 10 this, top 10 that, four straight series, making up stats. I mean, like it's obviously that's gaslighting. That's like exactly what gaslighting is. And one last thing though, for the fans and we're going to get into this more in the 11 a.m. hour, but our tickets went up in 2023, and we were told it was for a championship product. Our tickets went up significantly more in 2024, and we were told this is a team that's fighting for a championship this year. The Padres haven't had this extended run of success since the first half of 2022. You can look it up, and we're going to go through it. It's a string of about 300 games of incredibly mediocre baseball. So, like, don't tell us one thing and then say that, no, our expectations should be to just sit there and take it. No, we're going to boo you at this
point.
Yeah,
four straight series is great, but 8-4 in the big picture is not much. The Phillies are 16-3 in their last 19. Now that's a good stretch of baseball.
That's a run.
Right. We have not seen anything like that. You're listening to our 97.3 The Fan Padres Roundtable. It's presented by San Diego Roundtable Pizza. And I'm just going to throw out the possibility that Mike Schilt is actually a diabolical genius, because what is everybody talking about today?
Padre.
Mike Schilt's bad press conference. What really would we have been talking about? Manny Machado's continued struggles and an unending slump at the plate. And maybe he cleverly changed the topic about something he didn't want to have people talking about. Hey, talk about me and how bad I am at a press conference and not talk about what may be the real issue with this team. Chris, you mentioned it before. The stars not playing like stars. Manny Machado gave extensive comments, some of the most extensive comments he's gave earlier this week about his recovery from his surgery, where he is in the process, not being fully locked in, expecting that he will be there at the end. But in the meantime, as he continues to struggle, is there anything you do in terms of not playing Manny as much, putting him down in the lineup, or are you locked into putting him in the cleanup spot every single day and just crossing your fingers that today is the day that Manny becomes Manny Machado again?
Yeah, I'm an idiot. I'm going to probably keep hitting him cleanup because I don't really think I have a better option, honestly. I would consider very much so moving Bogarts down into the 8th spot. 9th is almost too embarrassing for a guy of his previous stature. But until he can show me he can do anything consistently, I don't think I can have him in the middle of this order. But Manny, as terrible as he is, he's still Manny Machado, and the back of his baseball card tells me that he'll end up with 30 home runs and 100 RBIs at the end of this season. I got to still believe in that. And as I said, I don't. Who am I going to put in? Who are you going to bat fourth? Ha-Seon Kim? I mean, Jackson Merrill? I don't see a better option right now. You have to cross your fingers and hope that Manny, you know, starts figuring it out again.
Sneakily, though, with just a couple of home runs and a couple of decent days, Xander's numbers and Manny's numbers are really,
yeah,
unfortunately
you.
Close now, despite how bad Xander was for so long.
No, he's dropping down.
Manny is
and don't forget, we had a roundtable discussion earlier this year where we talked about moving him out of the leadoff spot, Xander, and I said, absolutely not. You got to stick with this guy and ride it out. Well, I've ridden it out personally long enough.
That was before Arise was on the team. That changes
true.
The equation a little bit. Annie, your experience with Manny, is there anything that the Padres can or should be doing with their most expensive superstar?
I think he has to ride it out. And here's the other thing. Manny, just like every player on this team, has an ego. He wants to be in there. He wants to help the team. I think he's your best option right now. You've got to get him going in order to get the Padres where they need to go in the postseason. He's got to be a big part of that. And the other part of that is you want to keep him in a position to succeed, essentially. Like, you want, I don't know how to say, like, you want Manny to be happy, sort of. You know what I mean? Like, and that's not because he's a bad teammate or a bad sport or anything like that, but because he knows he's got to work into it. He's got to get into where he knows he can be. And if you don't give him the chance to do that, that's going to be a bigger problem than, you know, enduring some of these weeks until he gets his arm to where he needs it to be, that he feels more comfortable.
You know, Craig, when we had Eno Saris on, he said, I don't think it's decline with Manny. Obviously, the bat speed down a little, as it does with every aging player, but he doesn't see that as the reason he is struggling.
Highest on the team.
Yeah. Are you worried about, like, this is a permanent Manny problem, or is this, as Manny contends, just a temporary issue that might be, you know, the elbow might be contributing to it, and he's still got however many years of good Manny Machado style play left in him?
What choice do I have?
Yeah,
that's
a good point.
This is year one of 10. Like, I mean, the Padres had their chance to get off of the Manny Machado train last year, and instead they yoked themselves to him through his early 40s. If he is a declining player at 31, the Padres are screwed for the decade. For the decade. I refuse to believe that yet.
Same with Xander, too.
Absolutely. I mean, if this is what our stars are going to be, we're the Angels, period, done. Okay? We're the Angels. Get ready for a decade of, well, remember this bobblehead. Like, I'm not there yet, man. I can't be there yet. That's breaking everything.
We better not be there yet.
Right. I mean, that's Brian Kenny territory. And I'm not willing to go there yet. I believe he'll be better. Factually, he's been bad. Factually, there's no other choice that you can make. Chris said it. You are forced to bat him fourth.
I have one last thing. Can I just say about Manny? When he follows 8 walks over the course of 2.5 innings and 3 in the inning preceding his at bat in the bottom of the 9th inning, and comes up with the bases loaded and swings at the first pitch and grounds into a game-ending double play. And when he's asked about that, he defiantly tells everybody that he was just doing what he does and that the pitcher was throwing a bunch of strikes, just not enough. So that's why he kept watching. Here's my thing, and it's a little Mike Shildt. Be honest with the fans. Be honest with us. And be honest with yourself. I don't agree with you.
I think he is.
I think swinging 3-2, swinging at the first pitch was not the right thing to do.
I think it was.
He said that he didn't execute.
It's him. It's him. It's him. It's him. It's him. It's been him since he was a rookie in Baltimore. That is him. I talked to Tony Gwynn Jr. about it yesterday. And I go, because there was a guy in our chat that bet me $100. And he goes, and I'm coming for that money tomorrow. He said, oh, I can't wait for Tony Gwynn Jr. to eviscerate Ben, because Ben said he shouldn't have swung, or maybe he shouldn't have swung, And I go, no. Tony will absolutely tell you that Manny Machado, that's his pitch. He can handle that pitch. He didn't get the best swing on it. But when he tells you, Chris, or he tells the media, I'm not changing. That's not BS. I think that's legitimately who he is, and I think for him to be at his best, he needs to believe that and stay in attack mode because he mashes on the first pitch. It was a strike. He could handle it. Now, if it's a slider down and away and he does the ass out Manny Machado swing that we've seen, yeah, man, I get that after all those balls. But a pitch he can handle in the zone and end that game as the $30 million cleanup man, I have no problem with the process. I hated the result. I really did. But I really do feel that is who he is. I really do. Like, okay. Well, I don't think he was lying when he said.
He defiantly grounded into 2 more double plays the very next game on the first pitch.
I thought it was
kind of hilarious, to be honest.
I, the first one, I laughed my ass off. I really did. I laughed my ass off.
Well, everyone else booed.
I go, this is comedy. But I don't think it's defiance as much as it is who he inherently is. A guy in my DMs last night was like, man, listen to this audio. And I said, I love it about Manny. I also hate it about Manny. I love it. I love that a guy is that confident in himself, because you cannot play that game without being confident. But I also, yeah, I want a little eyewash from time to time. He's not going to give it to us. He's never going to give us and say, I'm broken, I'm battered, I can't do it. Never. He'll never say it.
And no, jump in here.
You said it better than what I just said the prior statement, because that's what I mean about like ego and everything like that. It's not, it's a healthy, it's a good, it's confidence. It's confidence, but it's also you need him. You need Manny to be Manny. Like Manny is that little kind of, you know, kind of, I don't, defiant, I don't know, but that little edge to him, you want it there. Like that's when he gets going, that's what drives him, that's what pushes him to have him in a position to succeed. Now, he did say he didn't execute on that, but he also was very kind of open about the fact that his arm is bothering him, that he's not, his swing isn't where he wants it to be. He's trying to work through that to get his swing back, but it's working through it during the season with a bum elbow kind of.
I guess what I disagree with, Craig, and I think when people say Manny doesn't know baseball if he swings at that pitch, I will totally argue with anybody who thinks Manny is not a very savvy player. Manny looks at the situation. Yes, the bases have been loaded with walks. Bud Black has just gone out there for a pep talk with his guy. You think he's telling him, I need you to nibble on the outside here and, you know, don't throw him a strike. He's telling you, you need to throw a strike here. Manny knows that. Yeah. And he's expecting and looking for something he can elevate. So something up and something in that he can elevate. It's probably the only pitch he's going to swing at. And that's the pitch he got there. That's the pitch he got.
It's also not. It's also.
Why wouldn't you swing at that?
It's also the big leagues where a guy that is missing out of the zone a little bit and then coming back into the zone, getting fouled off. As Manny talked about, Crony fouled one off. Toddy fouled one off.
That he should have struck out on the last pitch. He got a call.
And so it's also the big leagues where I think you're sitting there 0-0 and you're like, yeah, but this guy's a big league pitcher. I know he can find the zone, and I know he's probably going to find the zone here. I don't think he's going to throw me a slider away. What if it's box? What if it gets away? The tying run scores. I just think he missed his pitch, and I think he missed his pitch by a hair. And I take him, like Schilt said, I take him in that position again, you know, any day of the week, but I do think he's going to hack first pitch again. I do think it's different, though. 12 straight balls? Yeah, I don't think you swing there, maybe. But you know, knowing this is a pitch I've handled in 6,400 at-bats in the big leagues very well, I think you hack at that
point. Can we all agree, though, that that was a turd of a result?
No, it was a terrible
result. And that all of
result.
Us now are polishing to a certain extent?
Yeah, I think it's a bad result.
He does need to hit better. I mean, he's not hitting well.
He's not. He's my favorite player. But he's been horrific this year. Horrific. And I find myself, instead of wanting my favorite player, I found myself the other day when Crony like grounded out going, whew, all right, Manny will lead off the inning, next inning. That's not a fun place to be in as a fan and as a guy that loves him and loves his game, wanting him to lead off an inning instead of come up with bait with runners on.
Let's move on to another topic quickly. Another Mike Schilt decision. A lot of people were upset that Luis Arraez was not in the lineup for the series finale against the Rockies. Now, going up against a lefty, his numbers against lefties are not as good as they are against righties, but they're still pretty good. High, I think 280 around career average against lefties. But what do you do going forward? Now, with Donovan Solano seemingly a pretty good option against lefties as a right-handed bat, he went 2-for-3 with a walk. And you've got Jake Cronenworth, who's been one of your better players, but one of your only regular lefties that you could sub out if you wanted to keep Arraez and Solano both in the lineup. How does Mike Schilt handle matchups against lefties and making sure that he's not sitting the same guy over and over again?
Well, I appreciate you coming to me on this one. There is an obvious blind spot in the heart of the Padres versus left-handed pitching lineup, and that is Jake Cronenworth. And I'm sorry, Hannah. I'm sorry. Please don't bookmark tweets and ruin my morning the next time he hits a home run, okay? I think Jake Cronenworth's a very good player. Self-awareness is a critical part of success in any sport. And one of the big themes that we're driving at here is that the Padres are not very self-aware. They're always acting as if they're a 20-game over 500 team that had a brief period of lack of success and ignore the things that they could do structurally to improve what they've got going on the field. Factually, Jake Cronenworth is 6-for-29 this year against left-handed pitching with no doubles, no triples, no home runs, okay? He has an OPS split, platoon versus righty, platoon versus lefty, of almost 500 points. Now, that comports within his career a 100-point split
between righty and lefty. But we're batting him third against lefties all the time, and he has had no success. Now, I get it. He's your number three guy. He's one of the key leaders in your team. He's been off to a good start. Are we hurting his ego or hurting his confidence by
platooning him? Yeah, I don't think he
Well, listen, Donovan Solano can't be out of this lineup against lefties, period. And Luis Arraez can't be out of the lineup, period. He needs to play every single day for this team. So where can you fix that? You can fix that by sitting a guy who has really not hit against lefties, and that's Jake Cronenworth.
But you talk about extra base power, extra bases and stuff. You're not going to get that with Arraez playing first base.
No, but you're not getting it with Cronenworth.
Yeah, but you're also not going to get it with Arraez. You get a 280 average. What's his average against lefties, Crony? 260?
No, it's 1-0.
Oh, 1-0.
He's 6-for-29.
And the defense is much, much better than Luis Arraez at first. I want Arraez in there, too. He's not a platoon player for me. I don't know where you put him. I really don't. If he's gonna DH, you got to figure something out because you need Crony. Third, absolutely. Hit him fifth. Hit him sixth, whatever. I don't think he cares about that. I've asked him that before. He goes, I don't care. I've hit seventh. I've hit eighth. I've hit ninth. I couldn't care less. I just want to be in the lineup. But you can't platoon Luis Arraez. We are in 100% agreement on that. And honestly, you can't platoon Jackson Merrill, really. He gives you the best ABs maybe that you're getting other than maybe Arraez. Those two need to be in the lineup. And I get that he's a rookie. I get it. But he's also a rookie. He's got the freshest legs of anybody out there. Yeah. Any single person on that club, Jackson Merrill's ready. You know, and maybe you don't run him out there 154 games, 158 games. But I'm not sitting him against every tough lefty because he gives me a really good AB. He goes the other way. He hits it where it's pitched. And when you got Freed and Sale coming up this weekend, you need a guy that can go bat to ball. You need to find some holes. Those are two guys in Arraez and Merrill that can do it better than anyone.
Chris, you play with Tony Gwynn. Those are the comparisons. They may not be fair, but those are the comparisons. Right. Tony didn't sit against lefties.
No.
No, and a 280 career against lefties as opposed to 360 against righties, okay? But the 280 is a lot better than the 6-for-29, no extra base hits that Craig's talking about. Now, I think it's too early to sit Jake against lefties the rest of the year and just completely, you know, give that ship up. But for the time being, if Solano's playing, it needs to be at the expense of Cronenworth. And if Solano's playing and you want Cronenworth, then put him at second and give Bogarts a day off. I'm not going to miss him in the lineup too much, to be honest with you. But stop giving Arraez days off.
Yeah.
I'm tired of this, and I agree with you on Jackson Merrill. If Azokar gets one start out of every three against lefties, perfect. But he started each of the last three games against lefties. They don't score runs against lefties. Mm-mm. They got the home run by Profar. That's all they got against Imanaga. They didn't score any runs yesterday against a team that hadn't pitched a shutout all year.
And, like, leading Major League Baseball, they give up a ton of home runs.
So,
I mean,
you know what? Craig's right. They act like they have a whole bunch of room to mess around with this. They're two games under 500, and who knows if Max Fried or Chris Sale or how many lefties they're going to be facing in the next 10 days are coming up. I haven't looked at all the matchups.
They got both of them, Friday and Monday.
Yep.
Okay, but my point is, if we're going to keep running that crappy left lineup out there against lefties, we're going to keep losing games until they figure it out and make some reasonable changes.
Be more pliable, I think, is what you're saying.
Yes.
Be more pliable. You don't have the dreaded fearsome foursome at the top that you maybe think you do, and you have to be more pliable. You can't run out there. You're not running out Mookie Betts and Freddie Freeman, Shohei Ohtani, and Will Smith. You're just not. They're not as good of a top four as they have. You don't have to put those same four. You don't have Juan Soto and Aaron Judge back-to-back. Like, you need to be more pliable. I love the idea of moving guys around. I think it's important to do it based on what the situation dictates. But Arraez sitting on the bench in a game you have to win, along with Jackson Merrill, you don't have to win it. You know what I'm saying. You'd love to salvage that game. It's not going to help you win with those guys sitting on the bench. Two of the better hitters on your team.
So 97.3, the Fan Padres Roundtable presented commercial-free by San Diego Roundtable Pizza, and it is seventh inning stretch time. Take a little break from the baseball talk. I got a couple spicy meatballs to finish after the seventh inning stretch question, but let's go.
Actual
meatballs.
That's right over there on the table. Yeah. Right,
it is a food question. So in the wake of this week's judge's ruling in Fort Wayne, Indiana, taco and a burrito are in fact a sandwich, I'm going to ask the question. I know. I disagree, but that's fine.
Wait, what? They're wasting a judge's time?
Yeah.
Getting a ruling?
It involved a zoning issue where only a sandwich restaurant could go into a certain shopping center, and the owner of a Mexican restaurant said, well, a taco is a sandwich. It's a Mexican sandwich, and the judge agreed. So the question is, we have so many phenomenal taco shops in San Diego.
Yes.
When you want a guilty pleasure, what's your go-to order at your favorite San Diego taco shop? Mm. Like, Well, you're walking up there, you can get anything you want. Annie, what do you get at the taco shop?
Well, El Veganito in Grossmont Center Food Court makes vegan Mexican food. So I get potato roll tacos. They are delicious.
Potato roll tacos are good.
They are so good.
They're subtly good. Wizzy, what's your go-to Mexican food?
I have a feeling this is going to get less and less healthy as we go.
Oh, yeah.
By the time it gets to me, we're going to have triple carne asada.
I like the burrito covered in lard that I get. I like Jorge's. Big Jorge's fan.
Yeah.
And when I go to Jorge's, I either get the carne asada burrito or I get the shredded beef tacos, and I love them. I swell up when I eat it, but it's so worth it.
Craig?
I'm going around the county. I'm going to have Al Pastor tacos at Tacos LG down at down in National City. If I'm coming home from announcing a game or something, I'm going to get three beef rolled tacos at Rigoberto's with guacamole and cheese.
Chris?
Roberto's for rolled tacos and guacamole, preferably at least five rolled tacos with guacamole. Lucha Libre for the California surf burrito that has the carne asada, the shrimp, and the french fries all inside.
That's a good, and usually slices of avocado, which I don't know if the magic is wearing
off the menu now. Yeah, the sweep ended avocado.
We need a new bit.
Incredible.
We do.
You kind of stole my answer, but I love a great California burrito and five roll tacos with guacamole.
Five roll tacos with guacamole. Yeah.
Well, if I'm really guilty pleasure and
if you're gonna,
I just get a side
three.
Salad.
I'm sorry, three's enough for me. It really is.
The carne asada burrito, five roll tacos, and a tab, please. Does anybody remember that?
Oh yeah,
pink can tab.
Pink can.
Can't give you a tab unless you order something.
The diet drink.
Can I ask something about the left-handed lineup?
Mm-hmm.
Was part of it, because who DH'd yesterday? Was it Manny?
It was Manny.
Manny.
So was part of it the defense? He didn't want to give up anything
more
defensively.
Defense at first. Yeah, that's probably part of it. But at the same time, you can't take... So I just going back to it, people said, well, give Manny the day off. He's been struggling.
I said that.
Yeah, you can't take any of your righties who mash lefties out of the lineup. That's one of your chances to get them going, is to face a lefty. You sit them and then say, but we'll put you back in against the tough righty the next day. It's like, thanks, how am I ever going to get going? You're taking me out against the lefty? You can't do that. So you have to play Manny and Bogarts against the lefties, even if they are struggling, because that's their chance to actually get some confidence and get going.
But what Craig's saying is that they feel like they have to play Cronenworth, too, because he's the number three hitter. And Craig is going a little deeper into this and saying you don't have to play Cronenworth until he can do something against lefties. I think that's fair.
All right, I'm going to get into the – it's actually a metaphorical spicy meatball. Sorry, Woods.
Yeah, 20 hours.
Now you're gaslighting
us too.
I think this is one that everyone out there is going to like to hear. How can we in the media do a better job of covering the Padres? And are we soft, as so many people often claim, in our coverage of the team? Anybody?
Woodsy?
Silence. I finally silenced the
you
group.
Did. You know, we go back and forth on this a lot. I think. I'm excitedly nervous to talk to Mike Schill tomorrow because I'm
nervously nervous with
I think it's the like I said, it's the first time with that particular skipper that you're going to have to say, hey, man, I don't agree with you. I don't agree with you at all. You know, when we talked to him last week and we brought up a couple of instances of things that we didn't really understand, I loved how he explained it. I loved how he explained why he uses Eniel De Los Santos when he does. He's a manager. I'm not. I loved that. Why did you take Profar out? I loved his explanation. And I can say, yeah, sounds good. Tomorrow is going to be different. And I don't think I can, in good conscience, sit and listen to, well, what about those four series, though? I don't think I can do that as a member of the media. I don't think I can stomach that. I also don't want to go. People want me to call him a liar. You're a liar. You're this. You're that. I'm not going to do it.
Is he lying?
Exactly. And I
guess the first time in 3 years to win four series.
Right.
I think it was more mistake.
It was more a mistake.
Really a lie.
Yeah. I mean, so I know I'm an avid defender of Manny Machado, of course, and I get railed for it. But I've seen him carry this team before. I've seen it. We've won with Manny Machado here. I don't know. It is what it is. I mean, the Philly, New York, they don't win. They don't win either. Boston, whatever. Like, they've won, but they don't win a lot. Like, the Mets never win. The Yankees haven't won since 2009. Phillies hasn't won a World Series in forever. So it is what it is. I used to take it really personally. I don't anymore. It is what it is.
I want to throw out an example of something that I think a lot of us do, not just in San Diego, across the media. I've been guilty of it myself. And Andy, you've probably seen it in a million player scrums and manager and coach news conferences. Oftentimes when we ask a question, we will build the excuse into the question before we even get to the question. Can we stop doing that at least? Just ask the question. Be respectful. Understand that these guys are trying to do a job. It's a hard job. Most of them are actually quite good at that job and have a lot of experience making decisions in that job. I am a big proponent of always being respectful. You don't have to ask a question and try to get them. It's not a game of gotcha. But so many times, and even experienced members of the media will preface their question with 8 seconds of, or 30 seconds of, I understand that blah, 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 and blah, 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 and blah, 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 but why did you make that decision? Well, you just answered the question already. Why do we do that so often?
Yeah, I mean, I've been guilty of that. The questions where you're like, how hurt, you know, how worrisome is that? How concerned? No, maybe it's not concerning at all to them. Maybe it's not worrisome at all to them. So just, I think changing a lot of that dialect is important. And I also think learning more about the game. Like, I love, like you, sometimes I think people in the organization sometimes take it defensively. Like, you're questioning them when sometimes you're just trying to learn, like, what are the decisions? Why are those being made? And I'll also say this, and this is a much longer conversation than we can have in this roundtable. Covering teams has gotten a lot different. There are a lot of people, and it's obviously goes from organization to organization, who are, some players are coddled. Some people within the organization don't understand how media works. It becomes, And nor care to learn, because it's a private entity. Hey, we'll threaten to revoke your credential. Hey, we'll not let you do this. We'll warn the player that you're coming. Well, there's all kinds of different things at play now that I think make the job a little bit more difficult. And again, that really is a culture thing. It varies from organization to organization. I talk to a lot of beat reporters around the league. It's different from place to place. So I think the more that you can do what you're talking about, which is being, like you said, respectful, but also trying to understand where they're coming from, and again, trying to show up and understand on our end what the players are saying and coming from, I think that leads to better coverage.
Benny, but also, like, the players, they also need to do a better job. They do. I mean, it's,
you know,
I agree.
Hide in training
rooms. It is not hard to say, I suck right now. I'm working on it. I'll get better. It just deflates the whole thing.
But it's not hard to say that maybe you're right. In that situation, I shouldn't have swung at the first pitch.
But now it's harder now too for the player, because now they become viral. You know, the clip, sometimes the context isn't included. The player gets burned somehow. So I get that part of it as well.
I think as members of the media, we're human beings as well. Just like players and coaches don't want to be embarrassed, we don't want to look foolish with our questions.
I don't mind if it's a strategy.
Sometimes
the most foolish questions get the best answer.
Well, and that's true. And that is absolutely true, Andy. That's a great point, because sometimes I think we as question askers need to swallow our pride and go, I know this sounds like a dumb question. I know that it's a dumb question, but I don't have to talk for 5 minutes to explain why I know it's not you know, a dumb question before I ask it, Craig, and we all have that feeling when we're in a press conference. Those are uncomfortable situations.
They are. And, you know, this is a difficult topic to be sure. The most generic kind of, you know, short answer that I could give is I would love to see more of an eye on two things. One is a culture of accountability, because that is one area that the media can fill in where a team does not. And the other is to not approach as many, and I'm not talking about anyone here, but just there's a lot of naivete in San Diego sports reporting of just taking what's said and kind of repeating it and not questioning what is being asked, but taking it at pure face value. And I think you need to earn that, at least with me, you need to earn that trust that I can take you at face value. A lot of times I'm going to take a look at what's being said compared to what's happening, and I think we had a great example of that disconnect yesterday.
Can I also say something that I think a lot of fans might, it might be helpful to understand? A lot of the conversations, the best conversations, happen without a camera
Correct.
Around or a microphone around. You're having them just in the clubhouse talking guy to guy, and you're processing that and moving that, or coaches or managers. It's not all like most of the best reporting is not what you're seeing in these post-game pressers.
It's the stories. We had it yesterday with Cronenworth. We walked in. How we doing? Good to see you. And he's like, I was asking about holding runners on, and he showed me the different ways that he does it. Like, that was great. But I'm not going to do that. Jake, how do you hold runners on?
Right.
Shove the mic in his
podcast. Put the camera in his face. You know,
it was a good video.
It was.
You're going to get a different answer.
Yeah.
It is a topic that a lot of people want to know about. You know, they ask us, I think one of the biggest questions is like, oh, why didn't you ask him a tougher question there? And I wanted to address it. We probably, as Annie said, we could probably go on for a long time on that question.
Like, I'm expected to fight Lex Schilt tomorrow on the air. And
I didn't even get to the question about booing players and being home fans and booing your home players. I guess we can save that for a future edition of the roundtable, because
future
our
losing streak.
Yes.
Booing may probably happen. I hate to say
booing is okay.
Oh, that's
hopefully
baseball.
This one
booing
will come
fine.
To an
yes.
end.
Is yeah. fine.
Hopefully it'll be a good week. But a tough road trip coming up. Atlanta Braves, the Cincinnati Reds will be back. Actually, 2 weeks from today, I believe, because next Thursday is an early game against Cincinnati. Oh. So that is it.
Guys, you can come in and do it on
I'm
your own.
I'm going to miss you guys. I'll be in the desert.
For Annie Heilbrun, for Stephen Woods, Craig Elston, Chris Ello, and Tony Gwynn Jr. off in Atlanta somewhere. I'm Ben Higgins. Thanks for joining us on the 97.3 The Fan Padres Roundtable presented by San Diego Roundtable Pizza. Have a great rest of your day, everybody.
Our daughter Jessie loves playing detective.
A clue.
But since we discovered she has sensitive skin, we've been playing detective too.
We thought the problem was our puppy,
but it was actually our old detergent.
Aha. Uh-huh.
So we switched to Tide Free and Gentle. Tide cleans better than the leading competitive free detergent, and it doesn't leave behind irritating residues.
Plus, Tide Free and Gentle has no dyes or perfumes, so it's gentle on her skin.
Case closed.
If it's got to be clean, it's got to be Tide Free and Gentle.
When you think about businesses that are selling through the roof, like Aloe, Allbirds, or Skims, sure, you think about a great product, a cool brand, and brilliant marketing. But an often overlooked secret is actually the businesses behind the business, making selling and for shoppers buying simple. For millions of businesses, that business is Shopify. Nobody does selling better than Shopify, home of the number one checkout on the planet and the not so secret secret with Shop Pay that boosts conversions up to 50%, meaning way less carts going abandoned and way more sales going. So if you're into growing your business, your commerce platform better be ready to sell whenever your customers are scrolling or strolling on the web, in your store, in their feed, and everywhere in between. Upgrade your business and get the same checkout experience as business powerhouses like Aloe, Allbirds, and Skims. Sign up for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odysseypodcast, all lowercase. Go to Shopify.com/Odyssey Podcast to upgrade your selling today. Shopify.com/Odyssey Podcast.
It's our 97.3 The Fan Padres Roundtable presented commercial free by San Diego Roundtable Pizza. And it is seventh inning stretch time. Take a little break from the baseball talk. I got a couple spicy meatballs to finish after the seventh inning stretch question. But let's go.
Actual
meatballs.
That's what right we over need there on the table. Yeah. Right now.
It is a food question. So in the wake of this week's judge's ruling in Fort Wayne, Indiana, taco and a burrito are in fact a sandwich, I'm going to ask the question. I know. I disagree, but that's fine.
Wait, what? They're wasting a judge's time.
Yeah,
getting a ruling.
It involved a zoning issue where only a sandwich restaurant could go into a certain shopping center, and the owner of a Mexican restaurant said, "Well, a taco is a sandwich. It's a Mexican sandwich," and the judge agreed. So,
all right, gotcha.
The question is, we have so many phenomenal taco shops in San Diego.
Yes.
When you want a guilty pleasure, what's your go-to order at your favorite San Diego taco shop? Mm. Like, what do you? Well, you're walking up there, you can get anything you want. Annie, what do you get at the taco shop?
Well, El Veganito in Grossmont Center Food Court makes vegan Mexican food. So I get potato roll tacos. They are delicious.
Potato roll tacos are good.
They are so good.
They're subtly good. Wizzy, what's your go-to Mexican food?
I have a feeling this is going to get less and less healthy as we go.
Oh, yeah.
By the time it gets to me, we're going to have triple carne asada.
I like the burrito covered in lard that I get.
Yeah.
I like Jorge's, big Jorge's fan. Yeah. And when I go to Jorge's, I either get the carne asada burrito or I get the shredded beef tacos, and I love them. I swell up when I eat it, but it's so worth it.
Craig?
I'm going around the county. I'm going to have Al Pastor tacos at Tacos LG down at down in National City. If I'm coming home from announcing a game or something, I'm going to get three beef rolled tacos at Rigoberto's with guacamole and cheese.
Chris?
Roberto's for rolled tacos and guacamole, preferably at least five rolled tacos with guacamole. Lucha Libre for the California surf burrito that has the carne asada, the shrimp, and the french fries all inside.
That's a good, and usually slices of avocado, which I don't know if the magic is wearing off.
Off the menu now, the sweep ended avocado.
We need a new bit.
Incredible.
We do.
You kind of stole my answer, but I love a great California burrito and five roll tacos with guacamole.
Five roll tacos with guacamole,
Well, if I'm really guilty pleasure.
If you're going to do it.
I just get a side salad. I just get a side
three.
Salad.
I'm sorry. Three's enough for me. It really is.
The carne asada burrito, five roll tacos, and a tab, please. Does anybody remember that?
Oh, yeah.
Pink can tab.
Pink can.
Can't give you a tab unless you order something.
The diet drink.
Can I ask something about the left-handed lineup?
Mm-hmm.
Was part of it, because who DH'd yesterday? Was it Manny?
It was Manny.
Manny.
So was part of it the defense? He didn't want to give up anything
more
defensively.
Defense at first. Yeah, that's probably part of it. But at the same time, you can't take... So I just going back to it, people said, well, give Manny the day off. He's been struggling.
I said that.
You can't take any of your righties who mash lefties out of the lineup. That's one of your chances to get them going, is to face a lefty. You sit them and then say, well, we'll put you back in against the tough righty the next day. It's like, thanks. How am I ever going to get going? You're taking me out against the lefty. You can't do that. So you have to play Manny and Bogarts against the lefties, even if they are struggling, because that's their chance to actually get some confidence and get going.
But what Craig's saying is that they feel like they have to play Cronenworth, too, because he's the number three hitter. And Craig is going a little deeper into this and saying you don't have to play Cronenworth until he can do something against lefties. I think that's fair.
All right, I'm going to get into it's actually a metaphorical spicy meatball. Sorry, Woods.
Yeah, 20 hours.
Now you're gaslighting
us, right,
too.
This is one that I think everyone.
Shine box.
I think this is one that everyone out there is going to like to hear. How can we in the media do a better job of covering the Padres? Mm-hmm. And are we soft, as so many people often claim, in our coverage of the team? Anybody? Silence. I finally silenced the group.
Did. We go back and forth on this a lot. I think, I'm excitedly nervous to talk to Mike Schilt tomorrow, because I'm
nervously nervous.
I think it's like I said, it's the first time with that particular skipper that you're going to have to say, hey, man, I don't agree with you. I don't agree with you at all. You know, when we talked to him last week and we brought up a couple of instances of things that we didn't really understand, I loved how he explained it. I loved how he explained why he uses Eniel De Los Santos when he does. He's a manager. I'm not. I loved that. Why did you take Profar out? I loved his explanation. And I can say, yeah, sounds good. Tomorrow is going to be different. And I don't think I can, in good conscience, sit and listen to, well, what about those four series, though? I don't think I can do that as a member of the media. I don't think I can stomach that. I also don't want to go. People want me to call him a liar. You're a liar. You're this. You're that. I'm not going to do it.
Is he lying?
Exactly. And I
guess it's our first time in 3 years to win four series.
Right.
I think it was more mistake.
It was more a mistake.
Really a lie.
Yeah. I mean, so I know I'm an avid defender of Manny Machado, of course, and I get railed for it. But I've seen him carry this team before. I've seen it. We've won with Manny Machado here. I don't know. It is what it is. I mean, Philly, New York, they don't win. They don't win either. Boston, whatever. Like, they've won, but they don't win a lot. Like, the Mets never win. The Yankees haven't won since 2009. Phillies hasn't won a World Series in forever. So it is what it is. I used to take it really personally. I don't anymore. It is what it is.
I want to throw out an example of something that I think a lot of us do, not just in San Diego, across the media. I've been guilty of it myself. And Andy, you've probably seen it in a million player scrums and manager and coach news conferences. Oftentimes when we ask a question, we will build the excuse into the question before we even get to the question. Can we stop doing that at least? Just ask the question. Be respectful. Understand that these guys are trying to do a job. It's a hard job. Most of them are actually quite good at that job and have a lot of experience making decisions in that job. I am a big proponent of always being respectful. You don't have to ask a question and try to get them. It's not a game of gotcha. But so many times, and even experienced members of the media will preface their question with 8 seconds of, or 30 seconds of, I understand that blah, 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 and blah, 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 and blah, 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 but why did you make that decision? Well, you just answered the question already. Why do we do that so often?
Yeah, I mean, I've been guilty of that. The questions where you're like, how hurt, you know, how worrisome is that? How concerned? No, maybe it's not concerning at all to them. Maybe it's not worrisome at all to them. So just, I think changing a lot of that dialect is important. And I also think learning more about the game. Like, I love, like you, sometimes I think people in the organization sometimes take it defensively. Like, you're questioning them when sometimes you're just trying to learn, like, what are the decisions? Why are those being made? And I'll also say this, and this is a much longer conversation than we can have in this roundtable. Covering teams has gotten a lot different. There are a lot of people, and it obviously goes from organization to organization, who are, some players are coddled. Some people within the organization don't understand how media works. It becomes, And nor care to learn, because it's a private entity. Hey, we'll threaten to revoke your credential. Hey, we'll not let you do this. We'll warn the player that you're coming. Well, there's all kinds of different things at play now that I think make the job a little bit more difficult. And again, that really is a culture thing. It varies from organization to organization. I talk to a lot of beat reporters around the league. It's different from place to place. So I think the more that you can do what you're talking about, which is being, like you said, respectful, but also trying to understand where they're coming from, and again, trying to show up and understand on our end what the players are saying and coming from, I think that leads to better coverage.
Benny, but also, like, the players, they also need to do a better job. They do. I mean, it's,
you know,
I agree.
Hide in training
rooms. It is not hard. It is not hard to say, I suck right now. I'm working on it. I'll get better. It's so, it just deflates the whole thing.
But it's not hard to say that maybe you're right. In that situation, I shouldn't have swung at the first pitch.
But he's now, never they, you know that. What? It's Love harder it. Now, never. Too, for the player, because now they become viral. You know, the clip, sometimes the context isn't included. The player gets burned somehow. So I get that part of it as well.
I think as members of the media, we're human beings as well. Just like players and coaches don't want to be embarrassed, we don't want to look foolish with our questions. Which
I think, mind if it's a strategy.
Well, yeah,
question.
I mean, that's,
I don't
that's
mind
good.
At all.
I think
sometimes the most foolish questions get the best answers.
Well, and that's true. And that is absolutely true, Annie. That's a great point, because sometimes I think we as question askers need to swallow our pride and go, I know this sounds like a dumb question. I know that it's a dumb question, but I don't have to talk for 5 minutes to explain why I know it's not, you know, a dumb question before I ask it, Craig. And we all have that feeling when we're in a press conference. Those are uncomfortable situations.
They are. And, you know, this is a difficult topic, to be sure. The most generic kind of, you know, short answer that I could give is I would love to see more of an eye on two things. One is a culture of accountability, because that is one area that the media can fill in where a team does not. And the other is to not approach as many, and I'm not talking about anyone here, but just there's a lot of naivete in San Diego sports reporting, of just taking what's said and kind of repeating it and not questioning what is being asked, but taking it at pure face value. And I think you need to earn that, at least with me, you need to earn that trust that I can take you at face value. A lot of times I'm going to take a look at what's being said compared to what's happening, and I think we had a great example of that disconnect yesterday.
Can I also say something that I think a lot of fans might, it might be helpful to understand? A lot of the conversations, the best conversations, happen without a camera around or a microphone around. You're having them just in the clubhouse talking guy to guy, and you're processing that and moving that, or coaches or managers. It's not all like most of the best reporting is not what you're seeing in these post-game pressers.
It's the stories. We had it yesterday with Cronenworth. We walked in. How we doing? Good to see you. And he's like, I was asking about holding runners on, and he showed me the different ways that he does it. Like, that was great. But I'm not going to do that. Jake, how do you hold runners on?
Right.
Shove the mic in his
face. Put the camera in his face. You know,
it was a good video.
It was.
You're going to get a different answer.
Yeah.
It is a topic that a lot of people want to know about. You know, they ask us, I think one of the biggest questions is like, why didn't you ask him a tougher question there? And I wanted to address it. We probably, as Annie said, we could probably go on for a long time on that question.
Like, I'm expected to fight Max Schilt tomorrow on the air. And
I think it's a bad idea.
I didn't even get to the question about booing players and being home fans and booing your home players. I guess we can save that for a future edition of the roundtable, because
our losing streak.
Yes.
They probably happen. I hate to say.
Booing is okay.
Oh, that's
hopefully
baseball.
This one
booing
will come
fine.
To an
yes.
end.
Yes. Yeah. Hopefully it'll be a good week, but a tough road trip coming up. Atlanta Braves, the Cincinnati Reds. We'll be back actually 2 weeks from today, I believe, because next Thursday is an early game against Cincinnati. Oh. So that is it,
guys. You can come in and do it on your own.
I'm going to miss you guys. I'll be in the desert.
For Annie Heilbrun, for Stephen Woods, Craig Elston, Chris Ello, and Tony Gwynn Jr. off in Atlanta somewhere. I'm Ben Higgins. Thanks for joining us on the 97.3 The Fan Padres Roundtable presented by San Diego Roundtable Pizza. Have a great rest of your day, everybody.